You're listening to Quest to the Core, a podcast about leading with intention, clarity, and courage from the inside out, where the leadership journey gets personal, reflective, and powerfully real. In every episode, Jonna and Simone invite you into thoughtful dialogue that challenges assumptions, sharpens self-awareness, and equips you with actionable insights to lead with greater impact. Now, here is today's episode.
When was the last time you felt pulled in two directions by your own emotions? Maybe frustration rising in a meeting or excitement making you jump to say yes before you've really thought things through. As leaders, these moments happen every single day. And the question isn't whether we feel emotions, it's how we move with them.
This is Quest to the Core, where we explore mindsets and practices that shape how we lead, learn, and live. I'm Simone.
And I'm Jonna. Today, we're diving into leadership emotional agility in order to create a space to lead. Emotional agility is not about ignoring our emotions. It's not about being ruled by them either. It's about learning how to step into a space between what we feel and how we respond.
Psychologist Viktor Frankl, the author of the great book, Man's Search for Meaning, said that between stimulus and response, there's this space. And in that space, it's our power to choose our response. And that's the space we're talking about today.
In this episode, we're going to explore three things. First, we're going to talk about what emotional agility really is and what it is not. Then we're going to talk about the impact of emotional agility on us as leaders, on our teams, as well as the culture, and even relationships. And finally, we're going to just share maybe some daily practices or some examples on leading with agility in real time.
Let's first start with emotional agility really is not about trying to control our emotions or eliminate the bad ones, but really learning how to move with them and integrating them in our leadership. So, Jonna, how would you define emotional agility?
A lot of people have heard the term emotional intelligence. That is a term that is used quite frequently in especially organizations as leaders. But emotional agility for me really is about the experience of our thoughts and emotions and not being hijacked by them, but being able to respond intentionally. But the key there is that are we responding intentionally that aligns with our values, that aligns with who we are in order to be our authentic self?
One way that I look at emotional agility to help me just grapple with it and understand it is that it really is a process. It's not just this thing that you already know. I'm actually going to walk through this process. And this process really allows you to look at your emotions in that moment, then make that change like you were talking about. Do these emotions drive a behavior that align with what my values are? And if they don't, you get a chance to actually shift that in that moment. So the emotional agility for me is that process. So the process is a space and you get to choose.
And as I'm listening to you talk, it really is about just being real, right? It's not about experiencing those emotions and then labeling, which we've been taught, but emotional agility really is just being able to sit in it and connect it to who you are and just be real about it.
I like the ability to separate from those emotions. That's one of the reasons I like that process, because I know those emotions are popping up and let me name it. And I don't have to be it, don't have to have it control what I'm doing. As our listeners are listening, they may be a little bit confused or wrapped around the axle with emotional intelligence as well, because that has been a main topic of a lot of articles and training classes in the corporate environment. How would you distinguish those two?
Yeah, that's a great question. Emotional intelligence is the knowing piece of it, knowing what you feel and how to manage it in the situation. So more of that outward facing emotional agility really is inside. It is knowing how to sit in what we are feeling and creating that space to do something with it so that we can have more emotional intelligence. So that emotional agility is that inner foundation of emotional intelligence.
So would it be safe to say that a way to put an analogy over this is that emotional intelligence is managing the room and emotional agility is managing yourself inside of that room?
I think that's a great way to look at it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's easy to visualize that because we typically think about managing our emotions so that, right, a situation or relationship can either be enhanced or, you know, not be negative, where the root of it is managing yourself in that room starts with that emotional agility.
I keep coming back to the word agility. You know, the opposite of agility is rigidity. So it's very fixed. You're rigid in a way of thinking. And so emotional agility for our listeners, it's really just not that. It's not being so rigid that your emotions are right and they then have to predict or take over what you're doing. You hear a lot of people saying, well, you made me do this. You made me mad, so I did that. Well, whatever happened, you did get mad, but your emotions didn't make you perform in that inappropriate way. There really was a choice. It may have happened in a split second, but there was this choice. So the more emotionally agile you are, you're able to shift from that fixed or rigid way of thinking about it to, is this in line with what I want to do or not do? So hopefully that distinguishes the emotional intelligence from emotional agility a little bit.
And I think if we talk a little bit about the core parts of what emotional agility is, that may help define or provide those clear distinctions as well. When you read articles or several books out there on emotional agility, I think that the first piece of it is to have that awareness, just as you would in emotional intelligence. However, is to have that awareness without judgment. Mm. So not labeling emotions good or bad, which is really hard for us as humans.
We're trained as little kid, it's you don't feel this way. And it's hard to break free of those labels.
It really is. And that's where kind of the second component comes in, and that's the flexibility in the response. In order to have that flexibility, we have to create a pause between what triggered, like what the stimulus was, and the response of it. So creating that space to have the ability to pause in the moment is probably one of the most challenging pieces of it.
That is tough because when the emotions are happening, it's very real. It's the truth. It's either wrong for me to feel this way or I'm right in feeling this way. And I'm wrapped up in the emotion that's happening. But in that pause you're talking about, I could separate myself from that.
And that's powerful, mm-hmm. being able to do that.
That's one of the fundamental tenets of emotional agility is separating that you from the emotion. You are having an emotion. You are not that emotion.
Can you say that again?
With emotional agility, that pause allows you to separate from that emotion. I am not that emotion. It's not, I am mad. I'm having that emotion.
Which is a critical piece in kind of that last component of emotional agility. And that is staying grounded in discomfort because
it's very uncomfortable.
Emotions, and I would say this is probably my hardest one when I think about emotional agility for myself. Because when there is tension, when there is uncertainty, when there's something that I don't feel like has the harmony in it, I want to go fix it immediately. But I haven't taken the time to pause and separate myself from those emotions. And then, you know, things may not go the way that you planned because of that. But being able to sit in that and taking the pause to separate is huge and really will make the impact in the long run.
Do you find that when you try to just barrel through it, that it actually makes it stay longer?
Well, it does. And yeah. Everything that we've talked about in past episodes, right? You're not listening as well mm-hmm. as you could be, or you're not listening to the right things mm-hmm. in order to address whatever needs to be addressed. Communication breaks down. I mean, it just snowballs.
The message here is that, yes, there's tension, but sit in the tension. Just sit in that space without trying to rush to fix it.
I think it might be helpful to maybe give one specific example. I don't know if anything comes to mind for you to really distinguish of, okay, what does it look like, let's say, in a meeting between emotional intelligence and emotional agility?
But I have a great example. Inside of a meeting, I can talk about how to look through it through the lens of emotional intelligence, but then also the lens of emotional agility. So let's say in a meeting, I'm frustrated and I'm starting to feel it inside and that the meeting is tense. With emotional intelligence, you recognize the frustration and you choose to stay calm because you don't want to escalate that tension elsewhere. From the emotional agility lens, I may feel my frustration rising, and emotional agility is going to help me acknowledge that frustration without judging it. You know, I'm feeling frustrated because this matters to me. So I choose then to respond in a way that aligns with my particular values. When I'm responding from there, I may ask clarifying questions. If those frustrations rise, if I don't pause, if I don't demonstrate emotional agility, I may actually react defensively to you and say, hey, you're wrong. You don't know what you're talking about, versus me taking that pause and responding to reframe that, to respond in a way that is more powerful without the judgment.
Well, as you were talking, it made me think of an analogy of emotional intelligence is like being able to drive very skillfully. You know how to brake, you know how to steer, you know how to accelerate. You are able to navigate, whereas emotional agility is really being able to drive on any terrain because you're noticing the conditions, you're staying grounded in where you're at, you're choosing the best path forward. And if something comes up, you're able to not panic and you're able to navigate through those rough terrain, so to speak, as opposed to having the mechanics of emotional intelligence. That emotional agility is just that deeper layer to it.
So it sounds like emotional intelligence allows you to act on autopilot, like automatically respond and behave. But the emotional agility has you not be on autopilot and bring more curiosity.
Love the word curiosity. It really is helpful. Now that we've talked about what emotional agility is and it is not, the next question is, why does it matter?
That is a great question. What we're really talking about here is what is the impact of you responding or behaving in a way that you're demonstrating emotional agility? From a leader perspective, bottom line, it actually helps leaders avoid those snap judgments because that space encourages you to bring curiosity and to really get grounded in your values of why we're here versus trying to look right or be superior over some other person. So you're able to make better decisions as a leader. What are some other impacts that you believe are beneficial of operating with emotional agility?
Well, bringing curiosity helps foster that innovation. Mm-hmm. Leaders who model agility show teams that it's safe to think, to try, to fail, and then to really ask, okay, what did we learn from this situation so that we can continue to grow? But in order to do that, we have to be curious and we have to be agile in demonstrating that for people around us.
It helps with reframing my relationship to stress. Why are we stressed? I'm stressed because something's happened that's caused an emotion, and that emotion is simmering, and I'm just reacting on that emotion. And we know that when we're in a reactive mode, we're going to make those mistakes. So our stress becomes much more amped up and we can be ruled by that stress. Through an emotional agility lens, we don't have to, you know, deny that we're having this feeling. We can really just own the fact that we were having this feeling that is causing some stress. And say, yes, I'm stressed. It doesn't have to rule me. And it's not something that I am. It's just something that I feel.
What I'm hearing you say is that effective leaders don't attempt to suppress emotions.
True. That is what I'm saying.
Yes.
You said that much more effectively than I did.
Well, what I pictured and probably pictured myself at some point in time, that when we do feel stressed, and you've been around this individuals where everything is frantic because their stress level is elevated and they haven't taken the time to pause and to process and separate, and everything is urgent. And it really is hard to communicate. It's hard to make decisions at that state. So it's being able to employ that emotional agility so that you can think better and therefore make better decisions.
Oftentimes, we look at people who are great leaders and just try to emulate what they're doing. That's not emotional agility. You've got to look at that yourself and separate the thinking from the thinker and really begin to name that and choose what route you're going to take. So the quote from Susan David from her book on emotional agility is, "You have to be you as you are rather than a desperately striving lesser version of someone else." You and I both will do a lot of research. Well, you do a heck of a lot more than I do. And so for me, I was like, "Oh, you got to up your game. You have got to get really clear on research because Jonna is, she's great at this." And so comparing myself and trying to know the stats, you can probably listen to some of our earlier episodes of me trying to be something else. For me, the internal dialogue was, I have to know these facts flat rather than I want to contribute in these conversations because a lot of great learning comes out of it for me. So really shifting the language that I use to even come to this for me was a significant emotional agility shift. And so trying to not be the lesser version of Jonna is what I was trying to do.
I'm just shaking my head.
I see that.
I don't really know how to respond to that, but it does make me think about recognizing what our strengths are, having that self-awareness to know who we are and what we have to offer, and understanding how that shows up for us when we are emotionally charged. Because most of the time, we become emotionally charged in a situation and where we feel like our whatever we're trying to convey or whatever the conversation is doesn't align with our values, doesn't align with who we are as individuals. And so being able to have a clear understanding of who we are, what our strengths are, how we want to show up, all of our past episodes, being clear on all of that really does allow us to have the space to be emotional agile.
What I'm getting from what you're saying is that emotional agility really doesn't have space for that comparison or honoring comparisons and really just being me and the best version of me that I can.
And that's really what the quest is about.
Let's look at one other aspect that we haven't really touched on with this, the impact of emotional agility. And I'm going to get to a functional level of grammar. Grammar really matters. And we've touched on it some already. We've shared some reframe of language in our conversation so far. But I want listeners to really look at the language that they're using for themselves, particularly as it comes to what I have to do and what I want to do in this world. Handful of years ago, I was coaching a client who was just frustrated because her doctor told her she needed to exercise for her health, and she just took it as this weight that she had to do it. Through our conversation, she was able to reframe it to, rather than I have to exercise because my doctor says I have to I want to exercise to be here for my grandkids. She wanted to be able to have the energy to play with them. That subtle shift, it created that the space between I have to go do this thing versus I want to go do this thing.
I think about this all the time, especially as a parent and with my son of, you know, I have to do, and you fill in the blank there. And I think it's understanding what is the impact, what's the outcome, what is it that we want to achieve. When we get clear on that, then it is much easier to make that mental shift, but it does take us making that time, energy, and effort and being intentional about understanding what's going on inside of us emotionally in order to be able to make that shift.
So it comes back to our passions and our values. If you know what those are and begin to shift your language from the I have to I want to, then it will have you act and it'll drive your behaviors. I think the grammar is a big part of the impact that a leader can have in their spoken word, but then as an individual wanting to grow in the area of emotional agility, really look at that internal dialogue that you're having with that.
Well, and as a leader, we want to model what we want to see in others, or we want to model the best version of ourselves. Because when we do that, and especially thinking about emotional agility, we can connect it back to that impact of better decisions, better trust, more curiosity and innovation that comes in with relationships.
We've spent some time talking about the impact around innovation, connection, and psychological safety and better decision making. Knowing the why it's important is only really half the story. What can we offer our listeners on the how you can practice emotional agility daily and how to lead with it?
Well, stemming from our conversation on those core components of emotional agility, Susan David is a great author on the subject of emotional agility, and she does offer a three-step kind of practice for us. The first piece of it is to show up and notice those emotions, but notice them with openness and compassion. Remember, not with judgment. And then once we see the emotion, we're able to step out and create that distance and remember that we are not our emotion.
As much as we want to be.
I'm not mad. Yeah. I am feeling
mad,
which is an important distinction. Mm-hmm. And I think simply just saying that out loud when you are mad, because we typically say, oh, I am so mad right now. And simply saying, I am feeling so mad right now. And then just take a moment to see what different thoughts you have just based on that reframe.
This step, I think, really helps you to come at it from a non-judgmental space.
Yeah. And then the last piece of it is to take action or act in ways that align with your values. This is a key moment to really have individuals take time to identify what their values are. Sometimes we just take that for granted that we know what our values are. To spend some time and even our values shift over different phases in our lives, and to be very clear on what our values are so that when we need to move forward, once we've created that distance and we need to act in ways that align with our values, there is that true alignment. And it occurs even under stress.
That acting part is the behavior part. Like, you get to move forward. You've looked at the emotion, you've named the emotion, you've created some distance with it, it's sitting outside of you. And then you're making that choice to act. And that choice is coupled with those values.
Just for practical application, if you simply take time to pause, which I know we've talked a lot about pause, we've talked about pausing in episodes, but just taking time to pause, whether that is before you respond to someone, before a high-stake conversation, before a very stressful conversation, taking that time to pause and really just naming the emotions and using them as data points, I think helps with it not being judgmental.
When I'm feeling emotions, particularly before doing high-stakes things, I will do that before each podcast. I'll list out I'm feeling these things. And so,
do you want to share what you did this morning?
I can share what I did this morning. So this morning, I woke up fine. I was in a great space. But then as the morning went on, I started just feeling all sorts of things. And I was just jumbled up and my head wasn't clear. I grabbed a piece of paper and I decided I'm going to follow our advice from our preparation for this episode. So I named the emotions I was feeling. I'm going to rattle them off right now. I'll go really fast because, of course, I don't want to be this vulnerable, but I'm going to. So here we go. What I was feeling this morning was nervous, frustrated, embarrassed, confused, lonely, and tired. Inside of the Emotional Intelligence 2.0 book, page 15 from, and my version is a magical page because it lists a bunch of emotions and then the intensity levels. I then map the intensity levels with each of those emotions. I realized that all of them were either low or medium except for one, and that was lonely. It shocked me because I thought the one that would pop out the most was like this jitteriness stuff I had around being frustrated or being nervous, but it was lonely. And I was like, really? Like, this is the highest intensity emotion? I was a little surprised by that. Then I did what I normally do. It's a definition of lonely. So, you know, without friends or feeling like you don't have those connections. I have a lot of friends and people I connect with. So I then started just doing a quick inventory of all of that. And in the exercise, I realized that I have not contacted several of them lately. In that moment, I started reaching out, planned a dinner for tomorrow night, connecting with someone else later today. In doing that exercise, all of the other nervousness, frustration, embarrassment, confusion, tiredness went away. And the lonely went away because I named it. I put it out in front of me without judgment. I was a little surprised with what I saw. And I knew what my values are. Yeah, I love community. That's a big part of me. Why am I feeling lonely? And because I have not been exercising my community. And so I say that to just to share a practical application of this process for emotional agility. When we got on the call, you and I were doing our preparation. I shared it. I was like, I wasn't going to share this with you, but I will. And so now I had the opportunity.
And then I made you share it with everybody.
Yes, that's great.
But I didn't make you. I asked you.
Yes. Yeah, and I could have said no. And I'm the one that edits these things. So I could have edited that part out and I didn't. I share that because it works. And our emotions don't have to rule the day and run things. And as a human, one of the fundamental definitions is you've got emotions. It's what makes us human. They're taking in all of this information from around our environment, and those emotions pop up. And they're what keep us healthy and safe and fulfilled. We've got to listen to them. If I'd stuffed them down before this episode probably would have been fine, but not as great as it is.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that example and being vulnerable about what you were experiencing this morning. Again, these are just steps that give us tools for daily practice, sometimes multiple times a day. But the most important thing to remember is that emotional agility isn't about a set of tactics. It's really about a way of being. And that leads into a way of leading. So as many of our conversations, we circle back to the core framework, but the core framework can very well be a framework for emotional agility as well.
Well, I hadn't really thought about that, but it is, because emotional agility does not exist without curiosity. You can have curiosity without emotional agility, but you cannot have emotional agility without curiosity. And then the openness. You can't have emotional agility without the openness or the willingness. The reflection's a key part of it.
And to be non-judgmental.
Yeah. And then the embracing it. I had not seen the parallel. I'm sure you did before this, but until you said it just now, I was like, oh my goodness, it really is.
It really is. The core acronym really is a framework for us to be the best version of ourselves. And that's really what emotional agility is helping us to become, because we're able to recognize, use those data points, step outside of creating that reframe, and most importantly, aligning with our values, which is who we are. So that leads us to our reflection prompt. So we just want everybody to take some time this week and think about what emotion shows up for you most often at work. And what would you change if you treated those emotions as data points as opposed to directives? And I think as I'm talking through this reflection statement that I read that continues to stand out to me from Susan David in this, is that acceptance is a prerequisite for change, which is powerful because sometimes we have a hard time accepting how we're showing up or what emotion is actually showing up for us. And so being able just to simply accept it allows us to create the change that we want to see.
That's a powerful statement and a powerful way to look at it and to leave it and accept it as it is. It's not right or wrong. Well, this brings us to the end of our time. And our next episode focuses on how to get out of our own way. In other words, to clear the space between you and your potential. Until then, don't forget to access our resources on our website, www.questtothecore.com.
And we cannot close without our very special thanks to Grammy-recognized hit songwriter Cliff Goldwalker for our theme song. Please reference his information on our website.
Until next time, lead with curiosity, stay open to your emotions, reflect with intention, and embrace agility, because that's where authentic leadership begins.